What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast. I am Christy Francesco. Johnny Hot Tag George Rogers is the only one with me this week, which means it's going to be a much better show. George, what's going on, man? How are you?
You know, I'm doing all right, Chris. Dean was going to be on this episode, but by some weird coincidence, he got run down in the parking lot. So,
Yeah, he did it for the Adam.
Rikishi came out and he's like, "I did it for the black Adam." I was like, "That's weird." I did Rikishi, I'm not buying this 20 years later, just like I didn't buy it 20 years ago.
Exactly. And it's just, it's so funny when you look at the time that it happened. You're like, all right, I mean, I guess Rikishi, they're building up to be a monster heel. You look back at it, 20 years later, it's like, God, like they could have picked anybody else because the crowd just did not care that they wanted Rikishi the baby face. Nobody cared about Rikishi the heel. Nobody cared.
I will say this, and we'll get into it once we get into like the match.
Yeah.
I had no idea that it was going to be Rikishi.
I didn't
Like,
either. That
because
was
like
stunning to
because like
me.
because like Mick Foley's going through like the entire, he's gone through like the entire roster. So everyone's literally just like, who could this be? And then when he's in the ring with The Rock, his finger, and I'm just like, wait a minute. Because I'm remembering like the clues from when they said he saw some of my blonde hair. I'm like, Rikishi's got blonde hair. But it was the thing. I was like, but he didn't debut yet. That's where like my mind was. Because you don't realize that these people have been on the roster for so long, because me at 14, I'm like, oh, I didn't know he was the Sultan.
No, you didn't know that. I didn't know that.
What's happening here?
Can't did it did you lose me?
No, my
Okay.
phone just all of a sudden decided it was going to record what I was saying. That's not a thing. I'm not doing that.
All right, so let's kind of talk about why we are here today. As you guys are listening to this, I am, God willing, on vacation in Florida with my family. You guys are hearing this probably before I am, which is, great. But I will be posting this, or I this has already been posted probably a couple of days after our most recent episode, which was Halloween Havoc 1998. If you guys haven't checked that out, go over there and check it out, and then check out all the other episodes we have in the archives. This show is only supposed to last 4 weeks, according to Dean Holzapfel. We are up to almost episode 40. Overall, we're right around 120 episodes. So everything's going great so far. And like I said, we have literally the next year completely mapped out for the hot tag. So very exciting stuff there. So let's now, we just covered Halloween Havoc 1998. Let's jump 2 years later, where the Monday Night Wars was all but over in a matter of months. But we're talking probably the hottest year in WWF history up to this point. And we're talking, 8 months out of the year, 10 months out of this year, there's no Golden Goose, which is Stone Cold Steve Austin, who makes his triumphant in-ring return on this pay-per-view, which is No Mercy 2000, which took place October 22nd, 2000, in Albany, New York. 550,000 buys. And for a No Mercy, 550,000 buys. That is more. I just want everybody to listen to this. Obviously, it's the Austin effect. I get it. But still, this had more pay-per-view buys than Survivor Series, Armageddon, Fully Loaded, King of the Ring, Judgment Day, No Way Out, and just missed beat topping or even tying the Royal Rumble. So this was a big, big deal for the WWF. 14,342 people sold the place out. The live gate, $693,000. Another near $100,000 in merchandise. Dean, you and I, I'm sorry, George, you and I have talked about this so many times. Is 2000 probably from start to finish the best year in WWF history?
I'm going to ignore your botch.
Yeah, my bad.
And I'm
I
going to,
was all elite for a second.
oh, all elite. the big boy, Chris DeFranco.
Yeah, which.
the, no, I've said this multiple times to you on air. and backstage in our text message threads, I think 2000 was the best year for pay-per-views in WWE.
I agree.
It's every pay-per-view was a banger. Maybe, I mean, yeah, you had some dud matches in there, but you're gonna have that. I mean, it's like, it's a good year when WrestleMania isn't even your best show that year,
I know.
which is a disappointment because for all its faults, I do kind of like WrestleMania 2000, but when you go back and rewatch it, you're like, there's a lot of multi-man matches.
A lot.
But I mean,
A
as
lot of.
but there was a lot of storylines built. You saw a lot of guys coming up, like who were in the mid card and kind of getting that upper mid card push. Guys like Eddie and Chris Benoit, Jericho was making a push. Like you're basically watching the future happen as it's happening, so to speak.
So, and it, to kind of compare, like I said, at the very top of the show here, where this was where the Monday Night Wars was dead, to kind of go to the other channel here and see what the
Oh, please
WCW was
do.
doing. Like I said, this pay-per-view sold 550,000 pay-per-views, which was one of the best of the year for the WWF. In October of 2000, the Halloween Havoc 2000 had 60,000 buys, which was one of the highest of the year. So it, like, just to look at some of these numbers, Super Brawl 10s 55,000 buys, Uncensored 2000 had 47,000 buys. Out of nowhere, I don't know why Spring Stampede would have had 100,000 buys, but still, nonetheless. Then you go all the way down, Starrcade 2000 only had 45,000. And then it just got, kind of worse. Their final pay-per-view in March, which was Greed, had 40,000 pay-per-view buys.
Don't you mean it had 40 buys?
I mean, I'm sure that's probably an error. But,
Somebody, somebody get me Alvarez for the real numbers.
So, 2000 was such a great year for the WWF, like with guys like The Rock and Triple H stepping up as main event talent, like literally just worldwide main event talent. There were also guys like, hey, guys like Kurt Angle and Chris Jericho. And then you had tag teams like Edge Christian, the Dudleys, the Hardys. Then there was Chyna, Eddie Guerrero, of course, the leader of the locker room, Undertaker was here. Prior to No Mercy 2000, WWE's top star, Stone Cold Steve Austin, hadn't wrestled a match all year due to the neck surgery after getting run over by a car. That put him out of action for about 1 year. So this was his return match. So it was pretty big. And like I said, No Mercy did a massive pay-per-view buy right here, thanks to Austin's return to the ring. The business of WWE at this time was just so strong. If it wasn't the best, I guess 2000, you could say, in terms of pay-per-view buys, I would probably put it right up there with probably some of the best in history. But it did beat, I mean, this wasn't the highest number of the year, which we talked about, but it beat a lot of high profile pay-per-views like Survivor Series, King of the Ring, and it almost beat SummerSlam and the Rumble. It just showed you though how big of a draw one man is, and that's Austin. And we talk about Rock, we talk about Triple H and Taker and all these just superstar names. Dude, No Mercy had 550,000 buys because of one guy. Like, it's that just shows the star power that was Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I remember buying this pay-per-view. I was gonna be 14 years old, and I was just at this point, I was getting probably half the pay-per-views a year. At this point, because I was, working, so I had my own job and made my own money, so I spent all of it on WWF pay-per-views back then. But this was 2000 was so much fun. Sans Austin, I became a huge fan of Triple H and The Rock, and seeing I still love The Undertaker, but then I was a really big fan of the tag team scene back then. I loved Edge and Christian. I loved the Hardys and the Dudleys. The bangers that these teams were putting out there monthly were just insanity. But this show followed Unforgiven 2000, and that and this show was the precursor that led to Survivor Series. So let's get into this pay-per-view, man. And but
Sure.
first, what was your feeling on this pay-per-view at the time when you knew, oh, this is it, Austin's back?
I wanted to see the blow off. Like, I wanted to see the, I wanted to see Austin get his payback on Rikishi. I wanted to, it was, yeah, maybe not the greatest reveal in the world, but I mean, they kind of continued it. It was a hell of a build. And I wanted to see, Austin return to the ring and see how it was going to be. So, I mean, there really wasn't a match, so to speak. It was more or less two guys beating the piss out of each other for 5 minutes. But it told it, but it told the story. So that's what I was here for. But real quick, Chris, I want to get back to, I know you were talking about WCW and you were talking about how Spring Stampede did 100,000 buys. It was their biggest of the year 2000. I went back to look because you're like, I wonder, because you audibly said you wonder how, like how magically it basically hit it 100,000 buys. That is because that was the first pay-per-view after Bischoff and Russo rebranded and vacated all the titles. So it was the pay-per-view that was crowning all new champions. So that's probably why it drew. Which is saying something because the live attendance was only 12,500. So apparently no, and in Chicago at the United Center. So way to just disappoint. But
That's insane, man.
that's if I'm playing it back in my head, that's probably the reason why it did. But you can see the next pay-per-view just did piss, which was Slamboree. So no, so clearly they did a thing and nobody cared. Sounds kind of familiar.
Sounds familiar. The opening video package focused on Steve Austin's or Rikishi, who ran over Austin in a car and cost Stone Cold nearly a year of his career, per, you know, quote unquote there. Austin said he was pissed off. He was one pissed off SOB. Austin said he'll show no remorse and no mercy, with Austin saying Rikishi was a dead man. The No Mercy intro logo appeared after that. The pyro went off. And these fans were loud. The signs were like every 8 inches. They showed fans at WWF New York as well. And then we had JR the King here as usual. And then we opened things up with a bang, man. The Dudley Boys Invitational Tables match. Dude, how big was the pop for the Dudleys?
Jesus Christ, the fucking roof.
I didn't expect it. And then I'll say this even before, before the Dudleys, this is where I gave WWF credit in 2000, 99, 2000, why I think it might have been the peak year. Because every character, whether they were a babyface or a heel, were over. Dude, when Too Cool came out here, the place went nuts.
Hey, do you know who wasn't over? Lowdown.
Yeah, it's a shame because D-Lo's awesome.
Yeah, but nobody cared about Chaz. They're like, fuck is this guy?
Oh yeah.
Sure, came as Beaver Cleavage. Maybe then people would have remembered him.
Oh yeah, Russo would have loved that. So there are five teams here. The winners will be the ones that survive with the four eliminations. To eliminate a team, you have to put one wrestler of the team through a table. So I basically rated, this on as a whole. So we'll get to that. Match number one was Lowdown, which was D'Lo and Chaz.
Has
So
the
hey,
fuck out of here.
what's your favorite Chaz match?
If I'm gonna have to go back and really single out my favorite Chaz match, how do you pick between nothing and nothing?
Was good. Let's see here. Next.
Crasher had better singles
I know.
matches.
Somehow somehow Lowdown were eliminated. God, you didn't see that coming. So
Thought
Too
they were gonna
Cool.
thought they were gonna win the whole thing.
If this was WCW, they absolutely would have won.
Doesn't work for me, brother.
It nope. Too Cool, like I said, advances. Match number two is Too Cool versus Raven and Taz. And then you get obviously Raven and Taz. They win this one. Match number three is Raven and Taz versus the Dudleys. And like I said, when the Dudleys music hits and that pyro came down, that place just went bonkers. That just incredibly over tag team, man.
It went banana.
They did. The Dudleys beat Raven and Taz. There's a bit of like an awkward moment with D-Von and Raven during this match. And I'm trying to pinpoint when it happened, but I know that like immediately after Raven rolled out after a suplex, which was not a, you know, a massive move to take a guy out. But anyway, it was like a quick and a very simple elimination, which was very odd to me. Just another example of a failed experiment that Taz was with the WWF. Match number four is the Dudleys versus Right to Censor, which was Bull Buchanan and the Goodfather. Obviously, as we figured out the theme here, Right to Censor were eliminated. The winners were the Dudley Boys. I gave this about 2.25, 2.5 stars. It wasn't great by any means, but it was fine, I thought, as an opener because it gave the fans what they wanted, which was the Dudley Boys getting wins and tables were broken.
Hey, did you hear when like Grandmaster Sexay fucked up on a move and the crowd just audibly was chanting, "You fucked up"?
Oh, that was loud. That was like that was so loud.
See, they couldn't censor that even if they wanted to.
Oh, I know. So then, I mean, you know, fans were crazy about table spots in this era, especially with the Dudleys. So it was just a matter of giving people what they want. The false finish with RTC winning before it was reversed was a clever move, I thought, to really piss the crowd off. But then you gave them the happy ending with the Dudleys win. So that was good. Trish Stratus and TNA, which was Test and Albert, were shown backstage in the locker room talking about how their plan was falling into place. Then we see Rikishi being shown
And then
backstage.
Tess asked if Trish's boobs were going to fall out. And then
Yeah.
Albert's like, nah, let things fall out where they fall. Thanks.
Thanks. Rikishi was shown somewhere backstage waiting on Austin, who had not arrived yet. They showed clips from Sunday Night Heat the previous week with Trish Stratus doing a strip poker performance towards APA, which led to TNA, Women's Evolution, baby, which led to TNA beating up APA. The story continued from there on Raw and SmackDown. So that set up a six-man tag match with APA and Lita against TNA and Trish. Lita made her entrance as the women's champion. She got a huge pop. Her partners, the APA, didn't come out, so there's no sign of them anywhere. They showed a backstage scene with Tess and Albert beating up the APA with weapons like a tire iron, and they threw equipment boxes on Bradshaw and Farouk. And then some WWE officials showed up to break it up. Lita was watching alone, so she eventually tried to run to the back, but was met at the top of the stage by TNA and Trish. I mean, the story of this one really was for real, for a shoot, brother. The APA were battling injuries and they were going to go away for a little bit. I forget what the injury was with Bradshaw, but I know Farouk had a knee injury that had to get like microscopic surgery. So I know that's why they were basically bummed out of here. Trish hit Lita in the ring with a forearm from behind. Trish rolled outside the ring. I'm sorry. Trish rolled Lita into the ring and hit her patented bulldog. Wasn't patented yet, but that's the move that she came out with here. Albert did a slingshot that sent Lita to the middle rope. That looked brutal, by the
That
way.
looks bad.
It did. Albert got a hold of Lita again, but the Hardy Boys made the save. Jeff hit a drop kick that was phenomenal.
Yeah, he got like pancaked in the air and then countered it into a drop kick, but he
Did
still like
you?
flat back hit the ground.
Oh.
I'm like, how am I supposed to buy you getting up from that when you get hurt when you get thrown to the ground from the same height?
And like, dude, he got like 15 feet in the air. He
Yeah.
was so high,
Well,
and
won't be
high.
the last time Jeff ever gets high, so.
Yeah. The Hardys checked on Lita while Trish and her team left. I mean, basically, there's no match here, just an angle to further the TNA story with APA while Trish's feud with Lita kept on going. So it was good, man. I thought that was good. It wasn't. I didn't really think it was wasted time. I think it was great to almost in a way this was used to get Lita and Trish over.
Yeah.
And I thought that it worked.
Especially like during the strip poker game when Trish is down to like her last piece of clothing and Bradshaw just yells, "Drop them panties, girl."
Oh, anything goes, man, in
To
2000.
2000. What a year.
Oh, what a year. So let's see. We got Edge and Christian. This is good.
This is peak comedy coming up
This
right
is
here.
a peak 2000. Edge and Christian were interviewed by Lillian Garcia in the locker room. They claimed they were sick earlier in the day, but they were fine. But they kept on making nuts comments about Edge. And Edge said he could whip them out right now if she wanted him to. So then they whipped out a bowl of actual nuts. Christian complimented Edge on his nuts, and then that was it. They left.
Hall of Famers, guys.
Yeah, Hall of Famers, Hall of Fame. Rikishi was shown outside the building in the parking lot, and he had a sledgehammer with him. Gimmick infringement.
Hey. Snap.
It was time for a steel cage match here, which was with Chris Jericho first up to a mega pop. Jericho was really popular at this point. You know, he'd only been in the company for a little over a year, right? At this point, Jericho did a
Yeah.
promo. Yeah, like a little over a year. Jericho did a promo saying he can't even remember why he hated Xbox so much, and then ripped on the many things he hates.
Jericho speaking for the crowd.
Right? Steel cage match, Chris Jericho versus Xbox. The winner is Chris Jericho. I gave this match 4 stars. I thought it was really entertaining. They went hard for like about 10 to 12 minutes and did some very innovative spots. You know, the power bomb off the turnbuckle was a great move that you did
Oh.
not see in cage matches very often.
And it looked good.
It really did. The fans weren't into the match the whole way, but they cared a lot by the end of the match. They did some really big bumps too, like Jericho taking that slam off the top of the cage. And that was right before the finish, with Jericho outsmarting X-Pac by leaving by going through the door to win the match. I liked it a lot. You know, more time I think would have really served this match well. Although I do give them credit for working a faster style and making the most of it being inside the cage. What did you think?
It was really enjoyable. I mean, it was weird to
Yeah.
see them kind of continue on that feud. I thought it would have been done after Unforgiven, but here we are. They worked well together. I mean, it was a cage match that really didn't even need to be a cage match. It was
Right, yeah.
for the sake of it, but hey, I mean, it worked. Plus, also started that trend of Jericho just doing the Walls of Jericho on different things.
Yeah, it was. That was a good little trend for a
It's
while.
like I guess it hurts more when it's on
Right?
top of the cage,
I
top of
guess
the table.
it just hurts so much more. Mick Foley was shown in his commissioner's office in the backstage area. Rikishi asked Foley where Austin was. Foley said that Rikishi should get ready because Austin is closer than you think. Billy Gunn and Chyna were interviewed by Jonathan Coachman. Chyna said she'll get intimate with Eddie with a low blow. And Gunn said these two dweebs will be destroyed.
There's a good reason why he was not the speaker in New Age Outlaws,
Very.
and this was the reason why.
Yeah, that dude couldn't cut a promo if his career depended on it.
No.
Unless you had scissors, because you know that's something cool now, I
Nice.
guess.
Scissor me, daddy ass.
So stupid. I can't believe that's even allowed on television. Like, it's just so terrible. Billy, let's go. Steven Richards did a pre-match promo saying they would never hit a woman unless it was absolutely necessary. Richards said it is necessary that they thrash China and her rectally obsessed friend, Mr. Ass, while saying it is for our own good.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah, that was funny.
He wasn't the one Billy Gunn yet, so.
Right. So here we go. Right to Censor, which was Steven Richards and Val Venus versus Billy Gunn and China. Winners by pinfall, shockingly, Right to Censor.
No shock. These
Yeah,
guys
I
were winning
know.
matches in 2000.
Yeah, I gave this match about a star and a half. It was a decent match that got real boring at the end.
Yeah.
It was like basically like a house show tag match more
I
than
gave it, like,
anything.
if I'm giving it a rating, I'm probably going a half a star. It wasn't great.
Yeah.
I could have sworn somebody made. I don't know if I made this up or I heard it, but someone was cracking a joke about Val Venus like looking like an ice cream man because he had the fucking white
Yes.
pants and the white shirt.
Yep. They were the milkmen. Rikishi
He
was
used to be
shown.
a milkman. His
Yeah.
old gimmick.
Rikishi was shown. Well, that's funny. Rikishi was shown walking backstage with a sledgehammer. Again, a video package aired showing when Steve Austin was run over in the parking lot at Survivor Series all the way back in 1999. Austin came back a few weeks before this saying he was going to figure out who was responsible for what happened. Austin beat up a lot of guys all around the building. Commissioner McFoley told Austin he wasn't allowed to interfere in matches. Foley suspended Austin for his actions. Rikishi admitted that he ran over Steve Austin. He said that he did it for The Rock and he would do it again. Austin went after Rikishi in the parking lot, but this time Austin saw the car and Rikishi drove away. So obviously, 20 years later, we know now the real reason for Austin getting run over was that he could have major neck surgery where he missed about 10 months.
Probably because he got hit by a car.
Yeah, right. He got hit by a car. It was a shoot. Rikishi, Rikishi was a very popular face at the time when he, you know, and then he turned heel after admitting that he ran over Austin. The reason Rikishi gave was that whole, I did it for The Rock. It just wasn't the, it was almost like I lost my smile. Like, what are you talking about?
Here's the thing. And I went back and I rewatched that segment and the whole, I did it for The Rock. I get it, but that's the only thing that anybody remembers. Because he actually went through a whole breakdown where he talks about, like, he didn't do it for Rock. He basically did it for, like, the Island Boys, where he's like, WWF always allowed the Island Boys in, but they never allowed us to get anywhere. And he mentioned big names who never got like major main event pushes. High Chief Peter Maivia. The Tonga Kid, Jimmy Snuka never got a title run. I mean, he mentioned Offensica. They were tag champions, but they never, but they were never like pushed to any like main point. And that was what he was saying. He was basically trying to say, with Austin out of the picture, now The Rock can essentially be that guy from the island who they can push and represent the Samoans. It just didn't come off right because. And I mean no disrespect to Rikishi, he's just not a strong promo on the mic.
No,
they should have had somebody speak for him. They should have had it didn't really. I mean, I know there was kind of like a shortage of managers in 2000. There really wasn't a whole lot, but you could have had. I mean, I don't know who he probably could have gotten to come out and just kind of speak for him, be like, no. Let me tell you why it was done. You could have had you could have Too Cool just turn heel, no longer be Too Cool, and then have Brian Christopher just do it because, I mean, he's Jerry's kid, so he's got to have some promo chops.
Yeah, absolutely.
You would think. Or you have Jerry Lawler be the mouthpiece. That'd be an interesting turn.
Well, I don't count me in on that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's a great point. Rikishi makes his entrance for the match. Rikishi said that Stone Cold wasn't going to show up and that Stone Cold is scared to face the man that ran his ass over. Rikishi wanted Mick Foley to bring his ass out to the ring to declare that Rikishi was a winner as the fans chanted Austin for Stone Cold.
Hey, did Mick Foley's music sound different?
Not on my network. Did it sound different to you?
Like when I went and I rewatched it, and I'm sort of listening, like it sounded like it was harder than normal.
Hmm.
Maybe I wasn't fully paying attention, but I definitely thought his music sounded like a little harder than usual. I'm like, I don't remember him having a different music. It was always the car crash and the bullshit.
I'll have to go see if I can. Maybe I'm just not thinking about it, but I'll definitely go check that out. Commissioner Mick Foley got into the ring with Rikishi. Foley was about to speak, and then Austin's music smashed out, and he entered the arena to a mega earth-shattering pop.
The earth quaked.
It really did. Austin was shown driving into the arena in a F1, I think it was like an F-150 at the time.
It was an F-150 because I looked at it because I remember him like looking at it. I'm like, Austin should be driving like an F-350.
Hands down. Austin drove the truck all the way up to the ring and the bell rang. So here we are, no holds barred match, Stone Cold versus Rikishi. The result was a no contest. So I'm just going to read you guys some of these things. I'm going to basically read you the part where basically Austin could have been arrested for attempted murder. So we'll get into this. Austin went for a sledgehammer attack. Rikishi moved twice and Austin hit the truck both times. Austin slammed the part of the truck into Rikishi's back when Rikishi was back up. Austin hit him in the head with like the fifth chair shot. Rikishi was in the back part of the truck in the trunk area with Austin going into the driver's seat. Austin backed out of the arena and drove into the parking lot area. Austin beat up a bloody Rikishi with punches and forearms at the back. Rikishi was seated up against this rock structure that was on the grass near the parking lot area. I guess like the entryway into the parking lot or the parking garage. Austin backs the truck up. Then he accelerates. But thank God a police car gets in the way before Austin could murder Rikishi. Austin's truck hit the police car twice. That's more felonies. There were several
because he
police
backed up and did it again.
Yes. There were several police cars that showed up. The cops got Austin out of the car and they arrested him. You know, it's just, I mean, did Austin serve jail time for driving his truck into a police car or?
Can somebody do the legwork for me? Because I don't want to find out how many times Stone Cold Steve Austin was arrested during the Attitude Era. Cause I feel like it was a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot.
I feel like he was always like the cops are always coming out, like taking him out of the arena.
Yeah, I feel like WWE law is different than regular law.
Yeah,
I've come to figure this out.
Like, do they teach you this at the police academy? I mean, these are questions I have. I mean, these are honest questions.
I gave this, you know, 2.5 stars at the time in 2000. I probably would have given it 5, but watching it again, I go, yeah, it's about 2 stars. I don't think star rating really matters that much here because it was more of a furthering the story instead of a match quality. The wild brawl was very intense, full of action. The lack of a finish was done to keep the story going. So that made sense. The fans were into this like literally from start to finish. So they ate that up. Oh, yeah. But it looked like, I think it took the air out of the building when they realized there was no finish and they weren't even in the building when the pseudo finish occurred. The majority of the match had Austin in control. Rikishi took a beating, doing a blade job after a lot of chair shots. I think I counted Austin hit Rikishi in the head, I think 7 times, which was very unfortunately common in this era. So thank
nah,
God.
He's Samoan. They got hard heads.
Austin was placed in the back of a police car and was taken away by the cops. JR and Lawler talked about how Austin took it too far, and they showed replays of all the big-time felonies that were about to come Austin's way. So that's it. What was your thoughts on this whole match?
I love the story. I mean, I was here for it. I was suckered in. It was a no holds barred match between Rikishi and Austin. I'm not expecting some catch as catch can match. You know, it wasn't going to be in the ring. It was going to be a fucking bloodbath.
Yeah. I mean, that was what it was going to be from the start. Especially since when it comes to Rikishi, you're kind of limited in what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to take our one and only break here, and we're going to come back and we're going to wrap up the pay-per-view. I'm Christy Francesco. That is George Rogers. This is the Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast, Hot Tag Podcast on Instagram. If you guys want to check us out, give us a follow and let us know what we have coming down the pike. We'll be right back in just a few seconds. Stay with us. Welcome back, Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast. Let's keep things rolling here, shall we? William Regal did a pre-match promo saying he found out that he was told he was facing Naked Midian. Regal demanded the commissioner Mick Foley that Midian wrestles in regular attire. Regal said he wouldn't let Midian besmirch his title reign. So here we go on a pay-per-view European Championship, William Regal versus Naked Midian. Regal gets the win by pinfall. Look, I'm going to give this 0.5 star only because I love William Regal. This match was trash. It was 6 minutes, which means it was 5 minutes and 57 seconds too long. I felt bad for Regal being part of this, and I thought Naked Midian was just so stupid. If you don't have anything for someone, just fire him. But, you know, he was Undertaker's bully, so that wasn't happening. The crowd reacting to Midian's teases of taking off his clothes, but they didn't really seem to care about anything else. I get wanting to do a less important match, which is, you know, a letdown, as they call it, after the intense Austin match. But, like, this was bad. This would have been a good spot I think going back over the pay-per-view, this would have been a really good spot for the Trish and Lita ordeal.
I remember a backstage segment, probably it might have been later this year or it might have been the year before, where it was heavily implied that Midian had sex with a turkey.
Oh, I remember that. But what do I wish I didn't? Jeez. Okay.
He came back with a turkey that was all mashed in, and then he's like, "Oh, I just need a cigarette after," and he pulled cigarettes out of his fanny pack.
That makes sense because it was a year after American Pie came out. So I guess that's where they were going there.
And he took the turkey away, singing Afternoon Delight. My
Vince.
man. My
They
man.
showed a video of Kurt Angle interviewing The Rock where they used different Rock clips while Angle asked questions and reacted to The Rock
Was
answers.
great.
It really
That was
was
great.
such a great parody.
That reminded me of I don't know if you remember MTV when Weird Al would do Al TV, and then he'd be like, "Oh, I'm interviewing Avril Lavigne," and it would just be him interviewing different clips
Oh, so
of
good.
celebrities. So good.
Towards the end of the interview, The Rock was shown watching it. The Rock turned the TV off. Los Conquistadors were interviewed by Kevin Kelly. The taller one said, "Si, senor," to answer questions with dos, saying dos. So when Kelly asked about their true identity, they just said something and then they left. The Hardy Boys entered as the WWF Tag Team Champions. That got a great ovation. I mean, the Hardys were over. Los Conquistadors, which is Dean George's favorite tag team of all time,
Top 10, top 10.
top 10, sorry, entered with their fast walking to the ring, which was great. They greeted the Spanish announce team at ringside.
That was so good.
Here we go. WWF Tag Team Championship Hardy Boys versus Los Conquistadors, Uno and Dos.
I don't know if it was offensive,
I don't
but
know. I'm sure today they would
I
get
don't
crap
know
for
if it
it.
was offensive or if they were just paying homage to Los Conquistadors.
Yeah,
But
we'll go with that.
he got me. I was in.
So I gave this match like 3/4 of a star. So like it, this was like not a classic Hardy's Edge and Christian match, obviously, but
Because Edge and Christian weren't in the match, idiot. It was Los Conquistadors.
I'm sorry. It was more of a comedy spot. There were several minutes where the fans were dead quiet for this. I mean, they were so silent until the Hardys made their comebacks. The finish was creative with the double mask trick on Uno leading to Dos hitting the Unprettier, which is Christian's finisher. God, they must really respect Christian. Good for them.
I'm telling you,
Christian.
man. He had somebody like Christian, they treat him like Hulk Hogan in Mexico.
Yeah. Christian in this match also hurt his shoulder and had a stinger from that move where he dove to the floor, which was crazy.
Probably looked over his shoulder too much while he was watching TV. Probably hurt him.
Probably, yeah, right. He's doing a lot of that now where he's currently employed.
Oh, the fuck? Shots fired across the bow.
Just watching a lot of television. But hey, the check's cash, I guess.
And banging Adam Cole's girlfriend.
Britt Baker. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She botched that too.
Shit Baker, apparently. The only way to get a pop is to say shit on AEW. And they're like, "Yay, we know that word."
The worst. There was a shot of Steve Austin's truck getting towed away while the destroyed police cars were shown as well. Triple H was shown in his dressing room looking at a tape of Chris Benoit applying a German suplex and a crossface to who? Thank God we don't know. Hunter nodded his head at it as he saw something he can use. They showed a highlight from Raw last month when Chris Benoit headbutted Stephanie McMahon. The next week on Raw, Benoit asked Stephanie, "How's your head?" It's funny. Benoit also cost Triple H in his match against Kurt Angle.
Except Triple H answered that question. He's like, "You know, it's not bad, Chris."
It's not bad. Chris Benoit enters the match as the heel. Triple H got a bit of a mixed reaction. And I loved his entrance as always. So here we go. Triple H.
I think he was getting too much face reaction.
I agree.
So they had to go back to he was a mastermind behind Rikishi running down Austin
I think
just to
that
get
was
that
it.
heat back, because he was getting a lot of face chance when he was feuding with Kurt. So
Yeah, so here we go. Some little notes that I wrote down here. Triple H was a heel for the most part of 2000. But at this point, like we just said, he was really starting to get cheered a lot. The storyline with Kurt Angle, Stephanie, and Benoit costing him a title match made Hunter look like a resilient babyface who's chasing the title. This was a highly anticipated match since these two were like probably the best in-ring performers in the company at the time. And there was a lot of Triple H chance here. So here we go. Winner by pinfall was Triple H. I gave this match 5 stars.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was just a perfect technical wrestling match with Triple H picking up a victory. They each picked a body part with Hunter working on the left knee so often, where Benoit worked on the left arm. Was it the most exciting match? I don't know. I mean, but if you like that technical style of telling a story and wrestling, which I love, which a lot of people love, without doing a tope suicida or getting a piece of paper and lighting it on fire, they did a great job of telling
and
a story.
Super kicks.
And super kicks, yeah. About how smart both guys were at working over body parts. I think Benoit probably could have sold the knee a little bit more, but at that point, I'm really kind of just nitpicking, which I don't really do, so I'm just not even going to think about it. But it's just something that popped in my head.
I know, like before the match, there was another, you know, Triple H got that tape because Stephanie brought it to the locker room. Mm-hmm. You know, she's like, oh, I think there's something on here you can use. And then she asked Triple H, you know, so, you know, she can come down to ringside. And he's like, and Triple H said, I don't think it's safe for you to be at ringside while I'm in the ring with Benoit. And I'm just like, yeah, I don't think it's safe for wives to be around Chris Benoit right now.
Yeah, Kevin Sullivan.
Oh, boy, get him. Pin me, Booker, man.
Benoit cost Triple H some pretty big matches before this, so it was Hunter's chance to get revenge since Hunter was a top guy at the time. It made sense for Triple H to get the win. Stephanie left with a big smile on her face, and she was proven right for being a big asset towards Triple H during this match. Hunter left while selling a left shoulder injury. Man, I thought this match was so beautiful, and it was pro wrestling at its finest. How about you?
That go home spot where they were, where Triple H kept trying to put him in the pedigree and Benoit fought out of it, and he was trying to go for the crossface, and they just kind of kept going back and forth until Triple H eventually went with the low blow. Like, that was just, that was really good.
It really was. How fucking amazing was Triple H back then, dude?
And I asked this to Dean too, because it was right after you and I were talking about where you said, like, where that 2000 Triple H in ring was untouchable. I asked that same question to Dean, and he's like, I can get behind that.
Yeah. And I'm going to say the same thing. I know it's, again, it's unpopular to talk about it, but I'm going to say the same thing about Benoit. I mean, I have always been, you know, before Benoit went ape shit and killed everyone in his path, Benoit was one of my top 5 favorite wrestlers ever, because I've always, his matches like in WCW were like the most real thing I'd ever watched every time he stepped in the ring. Him and like Dean Malenko made it look real and and effortless. So yeah, I mean, it was like almost like heaven here, no pun intended, Benoit. It was almost like heaven here watching.
Yeah, he's not there.
No, he's definitely not. He's in AEW. Which is hell. this was like pure bliss for people that love technical wrestling and great, great storytelling. These two were just great. It's great.
Yeah.
All right, so here we go. Los Conquistadors were in the locker room with the tag titles here. Edge and Christian walked up to them saying they got champagne and Corona beers. Edge and Christian congratulated them and said that that their first title match is against them on Raw. The video
and
pack.
And then they toasted by saying Viva S.A. Rios.
Yeah, I know.
See, that proves it, Chris. Edge and Christian are not Los Conquistadors.
That's right. You're right.
I
stand corrected.
Yeah. Get with it, friend.
Get your facts right, pal. The video package aired for the WWE Championship match with the champion, The Rock, against Kurt Angle. What a fucking banger of a main event. There was a number one contender. There was a number one contender match with Angle beating Triple H thanks to some help, of course. Triple H said his wife, Stephanie, was a liability at ringside. Angle thanked Stephanie for helping him and asked her to be his permanent manager, so Steph agreed to it. Rock was dealing with a lot of things at the time since he learned Rikishi ran over Kurt Angle, and Rikishi is a relative of The Rock. Angle pushed the idea that The Rock had something to do with the attack on Austin. Angle made his entrance with his business associate, Stephanie McMahon. During Angle's entrance, it was announced as a no DQ match, while the announcers were shocked by that. And then the WWF champion makes his way to the ring with a massive ovation. The Rock was just so intense for this match. It was awesome. Like, it's just a big match feel, big fight feel. So here we go. WWF Championship, no disqualification match. The Rock versus Kurt Angle. The winner by pinfall, and your new WWF champion, Kurt Angle, again here. For me, back-to-back five-star matches. This was just incredible. I think they should have announced it as a street fight instead of a no-DQ match, because there's really no explanation for the lack of countouts. Either that, or it's no countouts as well.
It's funny because they kept saying, like, oh, they're outside the ring. And then King is like, yeah, it's no disqualification.
Yeah, all of the interference from the Stephanie, Triple H, and Rikishi almost kept me from rating it five stars, but it didn't. It was just, to me, it was just way too good. And all the interference just made sense from what the stories they've been building for weeks. They did a tremendous job of making us care about the near falls, because there were moments where it looked like The Rock would win and then Angle might win before ultimately Angle got the win. There was also the spot earlier in the match where Rock had Angle tapping out, which is a way to show that The Rock had the match won, but the referee didn't see it. You know, those kinds of finishes might piss some people off, but it works to build excitement. It's how you tell a story during a match. And then you got Rikishi's actions. The idea was that he was trying to help The Rock because he did all of this for The Rock, even though The Rock didn't want help. And in reality, Rock was going after Rikishi was going after The Rock on purpose. So,
you know, maybe The Rock would have run if Rikishi would just stop doing things for him.
Yeah. If like Rikishi would just like, you know, not show up to work, things would be fine. Angle was handed the WWF title and he went down to his knees with tears of joy. JR goes, he's crying for God's sake. Angle celebrated with the title while The Rock had some blood on his forehead.
I'm surprised JR didn't call him a little girl. He's like, oh, he's crying, that little girl.
You're not wrong.
That son of a bitch. Why, Triple H, why?
The Rock stared down at Rikishi in the ring as more replays were shown at what transpired. And then they replayed Angle crying, and then the show signs off from there. Your thoughts on this match here, this main event?
Another selling match, like back-to-back great matches. I won't give it a 5. I'll give it a 4.5. Just, okay. I thought there was too much outside the ring. Mm-hmm. And the chair shots that The Rock hit on Angle's leg when it was on the steel steps were clearly just not even hitting. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But it was another banger. Plus, it also completed a perfect year for Kurt Angle, just about. He won every title. From his debut year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I was gonna say,
the tag titles. I don't know if he actually ever won the tag titles in that.
Yeah, I'd have to see.
I don't think he did, but he won every major singles title.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the King of the Ring.
Yeah, so I wrote all this down. Kurt Angle made his television in ring debut at Survivor Series in '99. This match was 11 months later, and he's the WWF champion. It was one of the fastest rises in WWF history in terms of how quickly he won the title after his debut. That would be, of course, beaten by Brock 2 years later. You know, The Rock put him over, too. But it's still impressive thinking about this. Obviously, my favorite Angle Rock pay-per-view match is a few months after this at No Way Out, which was a friggin' banger. But as we wrap up here, man, out of 10, what do you give this show?
I think it's a solid 9, to be honest with you. There was a lot of, I mean, yeah, there were a couple dud matches, but it told us, but it, the Stone Cold and Rikishi match told a story, told a perfect mm-hmm. story. You had 2 5-star matches with the Benoit and Triple H. And I mean, you can call Rock and an Angle 5-star. I gave it 4.5, but,
mm-hmm.
The Dudley's tag Invitational match was really good. Jericho and X-Pac was also an underrated little gem there. I mean, there were really good matches on the show, that to the point that you forget that the shit matches even happened.
Oh.
Like, no one's sitting there saying, "Oh, this pay-per-view sucked because of William Regal and Naked Midian." Like, no one's saying that. Like, you're thinking about Kurt Angle winning the title for the very first time,
Yeah, I know.
and completing a year. The return of Austin after being taken out, 11 months prior at the Survivor Series. There was a lot of just kind of loose ends that were tying up, to the point that I, like, as we got to the end of the pay-per-view, I was thinking to myself, "Huh, there's no Taker on this pay-per-view."
No, there was not. I think he was hurt at this time, right?
I don't think so. I mean, well, maybe
No.
like a little bit, but I remember he was like feuding with Kane and at SummerSlam, and then he was just kind of gone for a month, and then he fought Angle at SummerSlam for the title, and he wore those fucking Godfather pants because his pants went missing.
Oh yeah. So I gave this match an eight, this show at an 8 out of 10. So I'm kind of close to you. There are plenty of things to like, especially when considering the last two matches. But there were some pretty rough segments and matches in there too. I thought the Angle win was tremendous, match worthy of a WWF title match, especially a title switch at the
Yeah.
time. I think the interference did get to be a lot at the end of it. Although, if you listen to the crowd, they were just so into it. The Triple H Benoit match was spectacular. The angle with Austin and Rikishi was obviously the selling point of the show. So the fans got what they all paid for in terms of watching Austin beat the crap out of Rikishi. And then Austin was again taken to jail only to be available the next day. But like some of the rest of the show, I just thought was a little bit like short paced. A little bit boring because the crowd was pretty dead for a little bit. I can't rate it as, high as the best pay-per-view of 2000, but I still think it was a very good show. Yeah. All
Which
right.
is saying something, because typically that September, October area is, kind of dead.
Yeah, you're right.
Not really a whole lot going on between Unforgiven and No Mercy. And
Very
usually,
true.
and this was around the time, like during this era, they would pepper in an insurrection show that they'd have over in England, or like Rebellion. They'd always have kind of in October.
So next week, we will be covering No Mercy 2001. So looking forward to chatting it up just a little bit. Chat
Yeah.
you up a little bit with that.
Sponsored by Blue Chew
Sponsored by Blue Chew.
and
All
Chili
of our
Steak.
shows are sponsored by Blue Chew. So George, thank you very much, man, for doing this, Dean. And we hope you feel better. Just kidding.
Good Lord.
But George, I really appreciate it, man. Had a lot of fun talking about this one. All right. This is the Hot Tag Wrestling Podcast. Hot Tag Podcast on Instagram. You guys can check that out. And we will be back next week. As always. So have a great rest of your week and weekend, everybody, and we'll see you. Bye-bye.